listening to a Goldsmiths University of London podcast.
Afi Papi Show. Jamaican, Caribbean colloquialism for showing off. And the whole kind of point of my talk is to kind of prompt the questions about Caribbean textiles and do they exist, if they exist, where do they exist, and kind of take on Rosika Parker's notion of feminism and feminist practices and textile practices being kind of hidden away and saying, well, actually, Caribbean textiles are there, we're just not talking about them. In order to kind of situate this, I've been looking at Dorcas clubs, which have existed in reality for over 300 years, and are taken from the biblical character Dorcas. And also there is a Jamaican or a Caribbean colloquialism, and it's called Dacas or Darkas. And it refers to a skirt, a petticoat, or other similar women's garments. So we've got the kind of a textiles connection there in terms of the things that the women are doing. So I argue in my presentation that textile networks are gendered spaces where the articulation of the textile practice exists in the fear of cultural and social design. But also argue that textiles objects hold meaning, and kind of referring back to Kopitoff's notion of the biography of things, that each of the textiles that we create have a biography, whether or not we know that biography or whether or not we can engage with that biography. And I think some of the speakers alluded to that yesterday. In 2005, Michael Macmillan's Caribbean The Front Room, Migrant Aesthetics in the Home, at the Jeffrey Museum, provoked a wave of notions of believing, of memory for a lot of people. For me, as a textiles practitioner, I walked in, all I could remember was my mother and her peers running Dorcas clubs in the front room, doing the crochet or making the cushions. And then as a textiles practitioner, I could see me. I could see my textiles history in this front room. But then I thought, but where am I in the textbooks? Where am I in the dialogues about textiles practice? And I couldn't see me. I couldn't see the textiles practice that I grew up with. And I still don't see it today. What I want to say about the front room is that in that space, it became the female space. So in the picture that we're looking at, there's the gram, or the radiogram in English. We call it the gram. But you've got the textiles on the top, and the kind of the textiles I'm looking at is the crochet. And this crochet had to stand up. It was starched to death. It had to stand. And the stories I start to emulate, when I took this picture to show my mum, her peers that were in Dorcas groups and Dorcas clubs, they talked about the different types of starches. So this materiality related to the textiles started to emerge. So you didn't use sugar starch in the summer because you've got ants in your kitchen. Yeah, you didn't use a particular type of starch because it would never be stiff enough. And they talked about the recipes that they then created to make these starched artifacts. The discussion then goes on to kind of think about if they do this textiles practice. So Dorcas clubs were a way of women articulating their space. Articulating their space and moving forward in terms of empowerment of the space. So whereas the gram and the record player was the domain of the male, the soft decorations, the antimacassars, the crochet, were the domain of the female. But who was this female? Now, if I go by the Jamaican Tourist Board 1969 advert, it says her ancestors were African, German, Welsh, Indian, French, and Costa Rican. She's pure Jamaican. Out of men can one people is the Jamaican colonialism. But I still don't know her in terms of a textiles aesthetic. If we go forward to Elise Dodgson's book, Motherland, she talks about her interviews of women in the 1950s, who they were, where they came from, what they did, which island they came from, how they got here. Andrea Levy in Small Island articulates the speaky-spoky portents with her white gloves and her speaky-spoky hat and her green dress. And she talks about how she brings that Small Island vernacular to another small island. In 1955 and 1961, British Pathé Film did two videos, and sorry, we can't actually show them because the links don't work properly, and it kept crashing my PowerPoint. But they talked about the Jamaican problem. But in that Jamaican problem, they were talking about the discussion of the way the men looked, smart, stylish, the way the women looked, all nice and prim and proper. This notion of that within the Caribbean vernacular, that all that we're really good at is looking good. So the fashion detail is there, but not the notion of textiles. And I articulate that in textiles, if you've got fashion, you've got to have textiles, because we can't have one without the other. They're binary, they exist together. The Caribbean market in 1961 gives us a chance to look at the notion of the Caribbean woman as she exists in her space. Now, in the 1960s, many Caribbeans, when they came over, they lived in one room. That one room space doesn't have the flourish of the latter space of 1965 when social mobility allowed them to move into houses or into flats or into apartments or into spaces where there was more than one room, where the Caribbean woman could articulate her space with her textiles. Dyke photographers in Birmingham were very much favoured by the Caribbean community there to showcase the promise of the front room. So these were the photos that were sent back home to say, this is how well I'm doing, this is how good I look. As an example, I raided my mother's archive of photographs, and the top one on the left, is it the left? Top one at the shows her when she arrived in 1959, very much the country lady, coming from a little village in the hills of Bellisgate, Jamaica. And the next three photos going clockwise show her using her dressmaking skills with her friends to become a more European, British woman using her textile skills. But she was never allowed to use her textile skills in any other place because she was told several times, her parents and friends were told several times, sorry, our clients wouldn't like to be dressed by a black woman. So they never were able to take those skills out into the wider market as they were trained to do. But what she was able to do was work with other Caribbean women because they wanted to look glamorous. So her textile skills came out then. What I want to kind of iterate is that social networks as a space for making textiles have existed in a variety of forms. And what these networks do is provide both economic and emotional support. And they operate at both a community level and a national level, but more through church groups and mothers' unions and women's leagues. So this was happening in the Caribbean. 200 years earlier, this was also happening here in the UK. We had Dorcas societies and Dorcas groups that were operating through the philanthropic movement. So whilst men were kind of arguing about the freedom of slaves, women were arguing about the freedom of other women and using Dorcas clubs, Dorcas groups as a way of doing that. But go back to Jamaica, in terms of understanding how their skills were taught. Up until 1938, there was no provision for training women in any kind of trade. So this notion that you would go up, be 14, get married, have kids. There was no kind of notion of moving you forward in terms of a trade. Again, in England, it was far ahead. There were the 1870 Education Act provided, made provision that textiles could be taught in schools. So there was this notion of textiles in both formal spaces and informal spaces. Many of you are familiar, how many recognise Dorcas pins? Yeah? So this notion of Dorcas, if you've never heard the biblical story, you will have used the packet of pins. And Dorcas was based in Manchester. And there's also Dorcas fabrics. And you can actually buy, there was a company in Manchester that was selling Dorcas fabrics, and it had Dorcas written down the selvage edge. So and you knew that you were getting a quality fabric, but it was also made under ethical conditions. Dorcas herself is a signifier of emancipation, empowerment, but also social and network conditions. And so we have Singer Sewing Machine promoting the Dorcas Society as a way of bringing families together. The two paintings that are diagonal to each other were one, I think the bottom one is 1450 and the other one is 1653, showcase that Dorcas has been in the feminine psyche or been visible for a large number of years. And then the bottom right is a window at a church in Rugby, which was commissioned in 1820 to tell the story of Dorcas. So all these kind of visual indicators indicate that the Dorcas Society as a female vehicle for sewing and sewing skills. And I should say that one of the Singer poster was actually shown in the local Jamaican newspapers as a way of promoting Singer as an ethical company that could help women to actually move on economically. From the Welcome Collection, this engraving was used to promote the use of Dorcas as a way of building up their philanthropic movement. So in terms of mobility, in the social hierarchy, you were expected to be, if you're at the top end of the social scale, you were expected to set up a Dorcas club, get members, and then train or teach women who were poorer than you to sew, so they could then get themselves out of an economic cycle. And people like Hannah Moore and Mary Wollstonecraft were seen as the two people that actually created the platform for women to think about emancipation and philanthropic movements. And they kind of spoke about the kind of frippery that women engaged in, and that they should look more at how they can transform the role of all women in all classes. And I'm going to move on because I don't know how much time I've got.
Just
5 minutes. Okay. I just wanted to say that Dorcas meetings were not only just about meeting, they were about supplying cloth or supplying clothes. And in that supply of the cloth, the clothes, women also engaged other women in a range of work. As well as that, the kind of notion of Victorian feminists struggling to create a construction for women from a private sphere into a public sphere relates back to the notion of the Caribbean women that came from Jamaica and Barbados and those countries to England in the 60s and in the 50s, 60s and 70s. They learned about Dorcas in Jamaica and they brought that practice back. So when they first came here, they were engaging in Dorcas clubs as a way of supporting each other economically, supporting each other emotionally, but also if men knew that there was a Dorcas group, they would actually use the Dorcas club as a kind of a marriage bureau. So they would go to the Dorcas club and say, do you know of a good woman back home? So, and the Dorcas women would, if somebody wrote that such and such is coming over, they would put them up until they could find a place to live. So this notion of a female society that not only looked after people emotionally, but also physically, but also giving them empowerment skills to actually make their own living, was very much the philanthropic work that was also done 200 years ago in the UK. But Dorcas clubs didn't only operate over a long period of time, they also operated under short periods of time. So for instance, in South East London, the Dorcas Society met 5 days in Lent to make garments to give to mission, and then they didn't meet again for the whole of the year. So they'd have a month of just making, making, making. Again, middle-class working parties and Dorcas meetings supplied clothing to be resold or recycled in mothers' meetings. Mothers' meetings, in turn, not only produced garments for the use of members, but frequently contained their own Dorcas societies, which sent clothing to foreign missions to be distributed by the wives of the missionaries. And again, I remember my mother and her peers they would make garments to send to mission to people that were less fortunate than themselves. So even though they were living in one room, it was crappy, it was sometimes the situation wasn't great, what they did, they still said, we're going to make for mission, and we're going to send to somebody that's less fortunate than ourselves. I've also proposed that Dorcas societies were very much within the Victorian psyche. So Wilkie Collins in the Lady and Woman in White, some people wanted to join the Dorcas Society to bring down another woman. In Vivian Richmond, she talks about how they would sell clothing at cost price. They were trying to create entrepreneurial spirit. In A Very Easy Death, Simone de Beauvoir talks about the fact that her mother did embroidery at Dorcas meetings and took part in charity sales. So this notion that the feminist writer Simone de Beauvoir would actually make note of something so not in the radar, if you like, but it the speciality of the fact that she's mentioned it kind of ingrained within you that it had to be an important part of the feminine psyche. In Religion, in the Vicar of Wexner, they talk about things where they make things such as pincushions. Prochaska, in his social review of Dorcas Group, said they combine compassion, needlework, and prayer. And what they, again talking to my mother and her friends, they would talk about the fact that you preceded making by prayer. So before they started the Dorcas meeting, they would pray, they would make their product. At the end of it, they would pray, and this is about the gift of the textiles. So the textile practice was seen as a gift that could be used for empowerment. And again, in a study by a lady called Sonia Moncino, she talked about the way that Dorcas changed the lives of the women through empowerment, giving them access to skills and the chance to change economic values. And move right on quickly. So the West Indian front room, like I said right at the beginning, I think provides a space for women of Caribbean descent to see their textiles practice, to see their stuff in there, to see themselves within a British aesthetic movement. One of the things I was able to do at the end of the exhibition was I was able to collate all the crochets and take photographs of them. So I've got a whole range now of photographs that I am actually looking at to try and understand the kind of technical skill. Because none of these have patterns. All of these were made by makers. Their biographies are written in the books. But they said, we didn't use a pattern. So I'm trying to uncode what those patterns are and trying to think about how those can be replicated in another form. Again, a small in Wolverhampton, in the Wolverhampton Museum, they have a collection called Small Island, where they documented the front rooms of returners back to England, to Jamaica. So their front rooms are documented, and again, the textiles takes pride of place. So the textile genre hasn't changed. One of the things that the Dorcas women, that my mother and her peers belonged to, they used to go parading down the street, a bit like this kind of the trade unions, sort of shouting and praying and singing, all about the grace of God and the spirit of God and how it can make you whole. I just want to finish off. What I did in terms of looking at and articulating the textiles practice, I set up a Caribbean space, both at the Pump House Gallery and the Knit of Stitch Show. And in that space, women came and we were sewing, we were crocheting, and what women started to do, we started to engage. I don't know if anybody recognises North American smocking, but these cushions were the key thing that a Caribbean house had, and it had to be in gold or red. And we started making in that space. We started showing the patterns. We had people coming from all over the world saying, that's not North American smocking, that's Italian smocking, that's Spanish, that's Danish. But what was great was that they were sharing stories. And one woman said to me, then, while we were sewing, we started seeing people taking pictures in the space. And one of the things that the women said was, for the first time in an exhibition, I'm seeing myself. I'm seeing my textiles practice, I'm seeing what I do, I'm seeing where I've come from. And that became quite poignant to us, that one of the things that people aren't seeing is the space. So we set up another Dorcas Club where people can make dresses for charity. And we even had some guys joining in. I just want to finish with a kind of my final comment. And this is Althea McNeish in 1958. Althea McNeish comes from Trinidad and she trained at the RCA. She was making designing cloth for Liberty & Co, Heels, Horrocks in the 1950s and 1960s. And I will end that. This is a parallel universe. This is a parallel West Indian front room that is coming, that came through. And again, the key thing is that Dorcas clubs have existed for over 300 years. What makes them still exist today? They can be found in Milton Keynes, as I got an email the other day. We've just set up a Dorcas Club. Can you tell us if we're new? We've got this exciting club going, it's called Dorcas Club. So, nah, sorry, you're 300 years too late. But the notion that people still exist. And one of the things that they do is that they, in terms of how they exhibit their work, they announce the Dorcas Club has raised, the Dorcas Club has done this, the Dorcas Club has done that. But you won't find any Dorcas Clubs on Facebook. You won't find them on social media. What you will find them is announcing through their church boards, this is what we've done. So that kind of brings up another analogy of, do we engage with social media? Do we engage with new ways of learning? What is Dorcas Club today and how does it then engage in a new kind of aesthetic for textiles practice?
Listening.